All right, we're beginning here 10 lines down on the top of Sama Kimo Amad Aleph, Bahi Rav Yoshaya. Kadma Vigdishato Mahu. If she goes ahead and is Makdish the animal, what is the din here? So again, we're talking about the case of Etnan Zonah, and we dealt with the Braita yesterday, which we amended, that if a person does a prepay or a postpay, it turns out that it's not Etnan Zonah. So in the case of the postpay, that is because the biyah was exchanged for credit, and then when he pays the animal, he's discharging his obligation vis-a-vis the credit. He's not really paying for the biyah. He could pay for it in any manner, any shape or form, because he has credit extended. Chooses to pay with an animal, that's just repayment of a debt. In the prepay scenario, the Gemara says it's a case where she already was makrivit before the time of the biyah, before the act of the biyah. And in being makrivit early, it eliminates the item from the world before the Maisei HaBiyah happens. Gemara says obviously it has to be a situation in which she has possession of the animal, has the ability to do such. But in that case, it was as if it was a gift. The fact that she had sufficient ownership and control prior to the Maisei HaBiyah shows that it wasn't necessarily remuneration for that act. And therefore, it's not considered to be Etnan Zonah. So the question here is, if before they have the Maisei HaBiyah, instead of putting it on the Mizbeach, so the animal is no longer extant, she is makdishit, and in that hektesh, she's removing it from her possession. Because we have a principle that articulation, when it comes to hektesh, has the same status as a transaction with the layperson. So when you are makdish the animal, you are committed to that action, and the hektesh goes through. It's as if you've handed it over to Hekdesh already. It's gone into the possession of Hekdesh. So therefore, Kaman Dakrivte Dami. And therefore, it's considered as if it's already on the Mizbeach, because it's no longer in his possession. Odilma Hashta Mia Hakoi. Problem is that it's still around. Ve'ite Beine. And it's still extant. And if it's still extant, that means that the Maisei Biyah will be connected or correlated with the item. And as Tosva notes over here, even though we have a principle that Etnan cannot take effect on something that's already Kodesh, in this case, if she was Makdishit already, then there should be no question that the Etnan cannot be Chal. Says our situation is a little different. Since over here, when she came into possession of it, it wasn't Kodesh, and then later on it became Hekdesh, maybe at the time of the action of the biyah, retroactively we will assign the etnan to the animal that she got up front that wasn't hekdesh. So that's the nature of the question. If it was hekdesh all along when she received it, then there's no din of etnan because it's not really in her possession. It belongs to hekdesh all along. So here you have two possible ways to view this idea that she has been makdishit before the zman biyah. Do we view it that it's now out of her possession, and therefore the individual no longer has his mind set on this animal being the exchange for the biyah, because it's already in the possession of Hekdesh? Or do you say the fact that the animal is extant and is still here, even though maybe it's in the possession of Hekdesh, he still has his mind on this animal being the exchange for the biyah? It says, "V'tishot mid Rabbi Elazar." Why don't we just answer it from what we saw in Rabbi Elazar yesterday? Dama Rabbi Elazar, shekadma v'ikrivato. That if she jumps the gun and it's makriv the animal before the Maisei HaBiyah, then there's no din of Etnan. Davka hikrivato. That's only true if she put it on the Mizbeach. Aval hikdishato, lo. If she was just simply makdishit, consecrated it, that wouldn't be sufficient. The Rabbi Elazar gufei kami boile. The Rabbi Elazar's statement itself is what the Gemara is questioning, or what Rabbi Oshaya is questioning. My. What is the din with regards to it? Misha pshitolei, the Rabbi Elazar, dekrivato, davka, vikdishato, lo. Is it straightforward, the Rabbi Elazar, that there is a distinction between hakrava and haktasha? And therefore, if you're makrivit, it doesn't become etnan. If you're makdishit, it does become etnan. Da ite bishat biyah, because the animal is still extant at the time of the biyah, and therefore there is a chalut of etnan zonah on this animal. Odilma hakrivato pshitolei, or maybe it's straightforward through Rabbi Elazar that if you put on the mizbeach and the animal's no longer around, there is no etnan zonah here. Bekdashato misapgilei. When it comes to akdasha, consecration, he doesn't know, or he doesn't have an opinion about it because he's uncertain about it. And the Gemara leaves this as a teku, an unresolved issue, as to whether Hakdasha is sufficient to remove it from the din of Etnan. In the case of a prepay, where the animal is no longer extant at the time of the bi'ah, there we are clear that there is no din of Etnan, because the animal's gone. If the animal's gone, how can you have Etnan? Now, at the time of the Maisa bi'ah, the animal is no longer around. That means the animal is a matana. Whatever's happening now is also a matana. Whereas, if the animal is still extant, but it's out of the possession of the woman because she's been makdishit, question is that sufficient in order to remove it from the world of Etnan? Do we say that since it's still around or the animal's extant, that still creates an Etnan? Or do we say that removal from our possession into the possession of Ekdesh is sufficient to take it out of the world of Etnan? And the Gemara leaves that unresolved in a teku. Ba'aleha v'achakach natana etnana mutar. Now the Gemara is going back to discuss the other part of the Braita, which is the situation of a post-pay, which is that he already had biyah with her, and then he gives her the animal, the etnan is not a problem. And again, the way that we've articulated it until now is that when you buy something on credit, the transaction or the sale is done immediately, and then afterwards you have a outstanding credit, which you have to repay. When you repay the credit, it doesn't mean you come into possession of the item. You came into possession of the item at that moment. And then the credit was extended to you. That credit then becomes a separate issue from the actual sale. And similarly over here, if he post-pays her, that means that the maisa bi'ah was exchanged for the credit or the promise to pay her. Now when he comes to pay her, he can pay her in cash, he can pay her with whatever he wants. He chooses to pay her with an animal, an in-kind payment. That doesn't make it into etnan. Now, Verimini, is that really true? If he has biyah with her and then he pays her later, even if he pays her from now or until 3 years from now, the etnan is problematic. This is directly in conflict with what we're saying. That's not a problem. Depends how he articulates the transaction between them. If he says to her, let us be together, and the consideration for that will be this particular animal, then that is problematic. If he just says, let us be together, and the compensation for that will be a tleh, but does not specify the tleh, then it will be okay. V'chi amar la b'tleh zeh mayhavi. Why does it help the fact that he says b'tleh zeh? Just because he specifies the animal, how does that make it a better situation or a more likely situation that's going to be asur? Ha, mechusar mishicha. We have a problem here, which is that the kinyan that would bring it into her possession doesn't exist. Which means, once again, we're dealing with the situation of a post-pay. There was credit extended. And yes, he told you how he's going to pay you, whether he said it in a generic sense or he told you the particular item, how he's going to repay the debt. That shouldn't matter because there was nothing at the time of the transaction that made it that this animal was the compensation. So, bizona avudat kochavim delokanya b'mishicha. Speaking about a non-Jewish harlot who does not have a kinyan mishicha, and therefore the monetary compensation or the exchange of goods is sufficient to create the kinyan that we need over here. Actually, this is a machloket Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara in Mabba Metzia as to which is the Torah-prescribed mechanism or method for creating a kinyan. Rabbi Yochanan suggests that min haTorah, money is the vehicle for doing transactions, and it's the mechanism for doing kinyan. The Chachamim came along and said, we don't want that to be the mechanism of kinyan because you're going to run into problems. For instance, where the person purchases the item with money, but he has yet to take possession of the object. So he purchases wheat, and the wheat is still with the seller. All of a sudden, the seller's storage catches fire, and the seller says, not any reason for me to put out this fire. It's not my stuff anymore. It belongs to him. And he's going to say, Nisrafu chiteich baliyah. Your stuff got burnt up. Sorry, but it was yours, not mine anymore. So the Chachamim insisted that they do a kinyan mishicha in order to prevent those types of situations, which is that the buyer now takes it into his possession, and we don't have these problems where it's left in the seller's possession, because you need a kinyan mishicha, ma'ot do not suffice. But that means in the Torah, ma'ot are sufficient. Rish Lakish believes just the opposite, that mishicha is the prescribed kinyan in the Torah, and he learns it out, miyad amitecha, nezu kinyan miyad liyad, what type of kinyan goes from hand to hand, that's a kinyan mishicha, and it says amitecha, which means that that kinyan is only available to amitecha, to Jews. So most Rishonim actually read this Gemara following the position of Rish Lakish. Which is that Rish Lakish says that the prescribed kinyan for a Jew, midoraita, is mishicha, but it says amitecha, which means that it's not the kinyan for a non-Jew. Ma'ot is the vehicle for kinyan for a non-Jew. So over here, the woman who is a non-Jewish harlot, mishicha is not relevant to her. And therefore, she can take possession of the animal simply from the consideration of the biyah. Because ma'ot konot, or the fact that she is owed the money, that in and of itself makes a kinyan for her on the animal when he designates or suggests that it's tlezeh. And that's how we solve the problem now. We've eliminated the need for a kinyan mishicha. The Balei Tosafot suggests over here that this could even be in the shita of Rabbi Yochanan. And that is, even though etnan is a din d'oraita, and mi d'oraita ma'ot konot, so then, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it shouldn't matter whether it's a Jewish or non-Jewish harlot. It should work over here. The Tosafot suggests that when the Chachamim came along and said kinyan mishicha is necessary, they were mafkia your ability to do a kinyan through kinyan ma'ot, which means that they eliminated completely the kinyan d'oraita of ma'ot. Chachamim have the ability to do that through hefker beit din hefker, and they say that kinyan ma'ot is no longer a relevant form of kinyan. And in that way, what they did was that for Jews, kinyan mishicha is the only mechanism to use, even though midoraita ma'ot konot, and even though etnan is a din d'oraita, and ma'ot should have worked over here, nevertheless, the Chachamim took away that possibility or that ability to use ma'ot konot, and then you could even read this Gemara according to Rabbi Yochanan. That explanation works in the question. In the answer, you cannot say that, because Rish Lakish, who believes that the Iker Kinyan for a Jew is Mishicha, he believes for an Ovei Kuchavim it is Ma'ot Konot. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan, who believes the Iker Kinyan for a Jew is Ma'ot, believes that the Iker Kinyan for a Goy is Mishicha. And therefore the answer here that it is a Zonah, Ovedat Kuchavim, is not going to work. And that's part of the reason here that the Gemara brings a second answer, because the Amoraim who are speaking over here are also Amoraim who support that position or that view of Rabbi Yochanan in Bava Metzia, and that's why the Balei Tosafot suggests that the Gemara brought a second answer in order to accord with that position of Rabbi Yochanan. Viva Yidema, Lo'olam Bezona Yisraelit, talking about a Jewish harlot, Ukugon Dekai Bechatzera. It's a case where the animal is already in her chatzer. And you have what's called a kinyan chatzer. Her chatzer can take possession of the animal on her behalf. Only problem with that is the lashon of the braita. If it's already in her chatzera, which means at the moment of biyah, her chatzer now acts on her behalf to take acquisition of the animal. Ba'aleha v'achakach natana. How can you call that a case where he has biyah with her, and then only afterwards gives her the animal? What do you mean afterwards? He gave it to her now, and it's happening right now. The chatzer is doing the kinyan immediately. Va'akanyu la'chatzera. The chatzer at that moment is doing it on her behalf. Lo tzricha teshavya nihala apotuki. Case here is where he makes the animal directed collateral. Damala. If I come and pay you the cash by a certain date, then I've discharged my obligation through the cash. Below, if not, then this animal will then be instead or in lieu of that payment. So here in a case where he makes it directed collateral, at the moment of the biyah, the collateral itself doesn't go technically into her possession because he still hasn't given her full rights to the animal. But on the other hand, it is directed collateral, and it will be the in-kind payment or in lieu of payment if he defaults on the loan. So here it's a little different than your normal case of collateral. In the normal case of collateral, there's a general lien on the property or the possessions of the individual. So if he fails to pay, then you can go after his possessions. But none of those possessions were designated up front. Whenever you pick something, you're just picking something as repayment of the debt. On the other hand, if you have directed collateral, like an aputuki, which says that this is the mechanism of payment. If I default or I fail to pay with cash, then that item already is in lieu of payment up front. And then when he defaults on it, basically retroactively, we see this aputiki as being the payment of the loan, and that it was ready and available at the time that the bi'ah took place. And since it is directed collateral, that's sufficient to make it that it's a problem of etnan. And that means that even if he has a 3-year window in which to repay the money, if he fails to pay it, and then this animal becomes the in lieu payment, that's enough to make it that this is etnan, because this animal was known and designated, delineated from the time of the bi'ah, as opposed to the case by the Braita, where we said that it is mutar, because over there was no directed collateral. It was just a general obligation, general credit that was extended to him. And if he repays it, then that's exactly what he's doing. He's repaying the credit. He's not giving the animal that was really available and delineated at the time of the bi'ah. Rashi notes here, Mihoyu Meshat bi'ah Shavya Putuki. Since at the time of the bi'ah was already delineated or designated collateral, directed collateral, v'mad bechatzera, and it was in her chatzer, chalalei etnan, becomes designated as etnan. Now, obviously, if he pays cash, it will not be etnan. But if he never pays the cash, since it was in her possession at that time, it was directed collateral, it is something that is clear that this will be the payment, and therefore, it takes on the shame of etnan, even if the default happens at a later time. Now, the Pali Tosafot point out that in this scenario, if all the animals of this individual were in her possession at the time of the bi'ah, and he didn't give it as directed collateral, why don't we say the same thing? Hey, I'm going to pay you the money. If I don't pay you, then obviously you have a lien on my possessions to take it. Later on, he defaults on the loan, and she ends up taking one of the animals that was in her chatzer all along. So why don't we say over there, that's also etnan. Why should that be different than directed collateral? The Bayit Tosafot make an important point here. It's the Eish Lamar, that if it's less stam, even if the animal was in her chatzer at that time, even though now he can't say to her, oh, you know, go take another tlev from the shuk, etnan does not take effect on an animal unless the animal is clearly delineated at the time of the bi'ah. Even if you believe there's breira, which means retroactively we knew which animal it was, that's not enough. The zmana bi'ah, you need the animal to be delineated as the compensation in order for it to be etnan. And that's why the Balei Tosafot say, that's why the Braita didn't say that both of them are a case of tlezeh. You could have said that both cases are a case of tlezeh. One is a case of tlezeh where it's outside the chaser, and one is a case of tlezeh when it's inner chaser. And therefore the Braita that says that it is etnan is a case where it's tlezeh inner chaser. Okay, Braita that said that it's not etnan is talking about a tlezeh outside of a chaser. What Tosafot points out is that it's a bigger chiddush to tell you that the case is talking about tlestam and everything is in her chatzer. So even though everything is in her chatzer, when you say tlezeh, when you make it in a putuki, that makes it into etnan. Whereas if it's in her possession, in her chatzer, but it was never delineated, we see from that it's not considered to be etnan, even though later on that tleh or those tlaim that were in her possession become the payment. That's not enough. Even if one of those animals becomes the payment in the end, that's not enough to make an etnan because it was not mevurar b'shat bi'ah. It was not delineated specifically as being the payment at the time of bi'ah. Now the Gemara has a question. Meitiv Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet is going back to Rabbi Yanai's principle that he established in yesterday's daf. Rabbi Yanai's principle was that the Bei Rabbi Yanai, when they were borrowing Perot Shvi'it from the Aniim during Shvi'it, and then they were repaying them in the 8th year, that was not a problem of Chalife Shvi'it. Because by the time they paid back the money, the Perot Shvi'it were no longer extant, they were no longer around. And so therefore it was not considered to be Chalifin for Shvi'it. So now Rav Sheshet is challenging that principle of Rabbi Yanai. Meitiv Rav Sheshet. Omer Adam Lechamarav, Ulepoalav. So he has workers here, he has chamarim, donkey drivers that do his short haul loads, po'alav, he has day laborers. He gives them money and says, take this money and use it to eat. go out and drink with this dinar. Ve'eino choshesh. He doesn't have to worry about lo mishum shvi'it, ve'lo mishum maaser, ve'lo mishum yayin nesech. He does not have to worry about any of these items. Now, the case of maaser and yayin nesech are easier to explain, which is he doesn't have to worry that they're going to purchase items that don't have tumot or masrot taken off of them, or they're going to purchase it from an amaretz where it's a problem of demai, or they're non-Jewish workers, they're going to go purchase yayin nesech from a non-Jewish store owner. He doesn't have to worry about that. Also, lo mishum shvit. He doesn't have to worry, the way Rashi formulates this is, shema ichubo perot shvit min achashud demokram. Our fear here is that he's going to buy perot shvit from someone who does schora, someone who is a trader in perot shvit. V'tanya masechet tzuka, ein musrim demei perot shvit, amaretz yoter migimul sudot. You're not allowed to hand over more than 3 meals worth of compensation or purchasing to an amaretz when you purchase the perot shvit from him, because if you give him small quantities of money, he's going to use that up to be eaten and it'll be consumed with perot shvit. What we don't want him to do is hold the money over. First of all, it becomes a problem of schora in perot shvit, as well as the fact now that this money might be around past the zman of biur, might have other issues with it because they are demei shvi'it. So Rashi says over here, where he pays his workers, he gives them money to discharge his obligation to feed them and to provide them, he hands them the money, and then they go out and buy these things that are improper. He doesn't have to worry about that, because he's discharged his obligation with the cash. He owed them meals, he handed them cash, he's done. How they eat their meals, what they choose to eat for their meals, is no longer his problem. He can't be held accountable for that. On the other hand, imam alayhem, su v'achlu, vani poreya, guys, go eat, and I will foot the bill. Su v'shtu, vani poreya, go out and drink, and I'll foot the bill. Choshesh mishum shvit, mishum maser, mishum yainesa. Then he has to worry about the problem. Because over here, it's that he is paying back the indebtedness that is created from their actions. Now this sounds exactly like the Beit Rabbi Yanai, which is that after the fact, you are post-paying for whatever they did here. They did something wrong. We know that. If you prepay for it, and you give them the money is theirs, and they can choose to do with it as they please. That's not your issue anymore. It's not your obligation anymore. On the other hand, if they're eating on your bill, and they are drinking on your bill, then what they eat and drink is problematic, because when you pay afterwards, it's as if you are exchanging that money for the Isur. And that's exactly Rabbi Yanai's scenario, which is when you pay later, we don't see it as Chalipin for the item that was originally. Over here, this brightness seems to indicate that we do see it as Chalipin for the item that was eaten or consumed over here, the Isur that was consumed over here. And that's a question on Rabbi Yanai's position. Now, we explained it according to Rashi that Lo Mishum Shvit is that Shemi Chubo Perit Shvit Min HaChoshud Al Shvit. The Balei Tosafot do not like that explanation. First of all, it differentiates it from the other two cases, which are Maaser and Nisuch HaYayin, where the problem is that there's an object that is a sore that they are consuming. Over here, it's a problem that you're handing money to a Choshud Al Shvit. It's a different type of issue. And also, the Balei Tosafot point out that the Gemara's solutions may not actually deal with that issue or fix that issue. And therefore, the Balei Tosafot suggests over here, it says, V'nir l'ri, v'rei shvinu choshesh lo mishum shvit, shuporeya chobo miperot shvit. That we don't worry about the fact that he's discharging his obligation through perot shvit. It's an obligation to feed these workers. Our fear in all these cases is that he's going to feed them with davar isur. He's going to discharge his obligation to feed them in that manner. So in the case where he gives them money, and then they go buy perot shvit, they go buy yayin nesech, they go buy things that are not me'usar, he's not feeding them those items, he fed them the money. Then what they do with the money, that's their problem. On the other hand, if he extends it as a debt and says, go eat, and then I'll repay it, what we're saying here is that he's basically discharging his obligation through dvarim asurim. That means that when they go and have yayin nesech, he had an obligation to feed them, and now he's feeding them with the ayin nesech. He had an obligation to feed them. Now he's feeding them with perot shvit. And underlying this is this idea that when you pay for it after the fact, it becomes yours, or it's as if it was yours at the time that they ate it. If that's the case, you're feeding them or discharging your obligation with the varim asurim. There is a third view here as to what the problem is with shvi'it, and that goes back to what we discussed yesterday, which is a case where they're eating from peirot shvi'it that are mishumar. It was a case where the peirot shvi'it were guarded by the Baal HaBayit, and this goes to the shita of the Baal HaTosafot that we discussed yesterday, that peirot shvi'it that are mishumar are considered to be asurim, and you can't eat them. So according to that shita, the Tosafot read suggests that that's the problem over here. You have three different views within the Rishonim as to what the problem here is with regards to shvi'it. But the main question from this Braita is from the latter half of the Braita, which suggests that when you pay for it after the fact, it's deemed to be yours. So then why by Rabbi Yanai don't we say the same thing? When you pay it in the eighth year, why isn't that deemed to be yours or in exchange with the peirot shvi'it and should take on the properties of the peirot shvi'it? You told me because it wasn't extant. Over here, the item's not extant either. They already ate whatever it is, and he's paying the money after the fact. We're still assigning the liability to him. So, alma ki kapara, d'meisor kapara. When he makes compensation, he pays for the debt that they incurred. It's as if he's paying or purchasing in davar isor and feeding it to them. Hachanami, so too in the case of Rabbi Yanai, ki kapara, d'meisor kapara. Should be the same thing. For Rashi, that means it's post-dizman ha-biur, and therefore the monies should be restricted and to rid yourself of those monies. Or for the Baalei HaTosafot, they can't do whatever they want with these monies. They have to eat them. Be'kedushat should be eat, to not use it for medicinal salves and other things that are restricted in Peirot Shvi'it. That should be a limitation on Bei Rabbi Yanai. Why does Bei Rabbi Yanai say the monies are not problematic at all? Dargamar of Chista. So Rav Chista explained the braita that we just brought in a case, it's a case where they go to a storekeeper who he has a relationship with. He already has a credit line established with him. So therefore, he gives himself over in terms of the lien. They came into Orche Lakufe, since he normally extends credit to him, Konile Dinar Gabe. As soon as the loan is extended, he basically gives him the money or suggests that the money is now readily available to this individual. So now over here, there was no difference between a case where he borrows money and then repays it later. He's also here borrowing money and repaying it later. The nature of the difference or the suggestion here is that the lien is different in this case. Where you have someone who normally extends credit, then the person who is getting the credit finds whatever money he has by him and he says, I'm going to give that to the chenmani. He designates right away the monies to repay that loan because there is an ongoing relationship between them. Therefore, the shibud is a stronger type of shibud, a stronger type of lien that makes it that the money's as if paid already. Makes it as if he's already resolved the outstanding debt. As opposed to the case by Rabbi Yanai, where these aniyim were coming and they were extending credit to the Bei Rabbi Yanai, but they didn't have any ongoing relationship necessarily with him, and therefore the lien was not the type of lien. That's what the Baal HaTosafot asks. Any loan that is extended has a lien that's associated. As soon as you lend money, then you are indebting yourself to this individual, and that indebtedness creates a lien on you. The Baal HaTosafot suggests that the Amora here either improperly understands the lien, or he suggests that there's a difference in the type of lien. We know that when it comes to liens, there are two different types of liens. There's what's called shibud aguf, which is that you are personally indebted to this individual. You're guaranteeing the repayment of a loan. And that's what's called a shibud nechasim, that your possessions are then indebted to the repayment of the loan, or they're there to guarantee the loan. So maybe the suggestion here is that's the difference in the shibud. When somebody has an extended credit line or a credit line that exists all the time, then there's a shibud on his guf and a shibud on his nechasim. Whereas when it comes to just the case where it's a relationship that happens every once in a while, there you have a shibud a guf and you don't have shibud nechasim. Now that's incorrect. That's what the Gemara is going to point out, that the shibud nechasim exists in both cases. And that's why this assumption is incorrect. But the Hava Mina was that maybe there's a difference in the nature of the shibud. Or the relationship between them could create consideration, which is that the case by where you have a credit line is extended all the time, by the mere fact that this chenmani trusts you all the time, that belief in you is consideration enough that you give over the money to that individual. It's as if you're makne, whatever it is that you owe him, to him immediately because there's consideration. In a case where there's no previous relationship between you, then in that situation, you're not makne anything to them because they're believing you in this case. It's a one-time thing. It's not an ongoing relationship where that belief creates a certain amount of consideration. And the Ramban even makes that more stark by saying that the case by Rabbi Yonai was a case where they're repaying in Shminit. And that means that the monies that you're going to repay are not extant right now because that repayment's not going to happen until Shminit. And that's why over here there's no Shibud Nechasim associated with Rabbi Yonai's din, as opposed to over here where there is a Shibud Nechasim that exists. As over here, he could be making the money that he's going to pay him with because the payment is due in a short duration. So that's why over here you would differentiate between the case of Rabbi Yonai and the case in the Braita. But the Gemara asks, the problem with that is, as we've already noted, aval chenveni shein makifo, this is a chenveni that does not extend credit to him all the time, or he doesn't have a credit line with, my, what would you say? Mutar, that it should be fine. If that's right, instead of saying in the two halves of the Braita, one is a case where he hands them the money and then they go out and eat, and the other one is a case where he tells them, eat and then I'll repay. You could have made a much finer distinction within the Braita, which is, in a case where it's a chenvani that extends him credit, there, the lien is strong. It's a case of a chenmani that doesn't extend credit to him on a regular basis. Mutar. Then you could have just made a much finer distinction within the braita. Instead of saying the case where it's mutar, it's where he hands him the money up front, and the case where it's asur is where he says, I'm going to pay the loan afterwards, you could have made the distinction this way. The case where it's mutar is when he's dealing with a chenmani that he doesn't have a credit line with. The case where it's asur is a case where he has a credit line with the chenvani. So it would be almost the identical case with a small nuanced change, and you'll get it to be mutar in one case and asur in the other case. That would be a much better scenario for the bright to bring up. The fact that the bright doesn't bring that up kind of shows you that that must not be a distinction that is valid. This is the question that we discussed before. Just because he doesn't extend him credit on a regular basis doesn't mean that he's not encumbered to this chenvani. As soon as you incur indebtedness, there is, as the Baal Tosfot are going to say now, there's both a shibud aguf and a shibud nechasim that happens automatically. Or the mere fact that someone's willing to extend you credit and believes you should be sufficient consideration that you are now going to give over in acquisition to him the what you owe him. And so there should be no difference between someone who extends a credit line on a regular basis or someone who extends credit on a one-time basis. V'hamar Rava, and I can prove to you that there should be no distinction, because Rava says, Omer l'chaviro tein mane l'ploni, if a third party says to an individual, give 100 zuz to this individual, v'iknu kol nechasai l'cha, and then all of my possessions will go to you, kana mi din arev. It works because of the din of an arev. Din of an arev is a guarantor. A guarantor, why is he obligated to make repayment or make good on debts that are outstanding? You have a creditor, you have a debtor. The debtor received money from the creditor, and that's what makes him indebted to him. That's what creates the kinyan, and therefore now the debtor has an obligation to repay the creditor. All the arev did was say, I'll guarantee that the debtor will repay the money. Where was there a kinyan, or where was his obligation formed, aside from his articulation that I'm going to guarantee the debtor? Nevertheless, we say that a guarantor, an arev, is encumbered, and he has an obligation if the debtor defaults. Something like the daya that believes that only if the debtor defaults, then can you go after the arev. So then, in the case where the debtor does default, you can go after the arev. So where was that obligation created? That's the sugya that we've discussed in Zikin, which is that an arev does obligate himself, either because of the trust that the creditor places in him, or whatever the mechanism it is that creates that for an arev. But that shows you that you don't always have to get or receive something in order to encumber yourself. And similarly, the case that Rav is describing over here, Amer l'chaviro ten mane l'ploni, he's saying, A, give money to B. C is the one who's now telling A what's going to happen. A gives money to B, and then C says, you can have A, you can have all my possessions. What did C receive from A that he's willing to give him all of his possessions? The money went from A to B. So nevertheless, it works midin arev, which is that if you are willing to listen to someone and do their bidding, then that's enough to obligate you, just like by the arev. The reason the creditor extended the money to the debtor is because the arev told him, I'm going to guarantee the loan. And that's why the creditor extended the credit. That's enough to obligate him. So it's over here. The individual, when he tells A to give the money to B, when A listens to him, that's enough to obligate him that C now is obligated to give whatever it is, all of his possessions, to A. You can create an encumberedness or an indebtedness even if you didn't receive anything. So over here too, just because you didn't receive anything doesn't mean that there's no shibud over here. He extended you credit. So he doesn't extend you credit on a regular basis. But the mere fact that he extended you credit is enough of a reason to obligate you and say that you're encumbered to repay him, that there's a shibud over here. And that shibud is what you're telling me is absent when there's no credit line there? It's just not true. Rava says any transaction that involves someone who does something based on your bidding, that's enough to make it that there's an obligation. So if he lends you money or he extends credit to you based on now you're sending your workers over there to go pick up stuff and he extends you credit and then you pay it back, that's the equivalent of Rava's case. He's saying, Chenvani A, give the money, give the product to B, and C says, I'll be obligated for it, I'll pay it. So he's guaranteeing basically the transaction between them, and he should be obligated. There is a shibud over there. Eloma Rava, Rava says that's not the distinction between the bright to hear and Rabbi Yonai's position, but rather, Loshna Makifo, Loshna Shein Makifo, makes no difference whether he has a credit line or it's a one-time thing. Apagav de mishabed le, kevan de lo miyachet shibudei lo mitzar. Even though there's a shibud over here, since the form of repayment or the collateral is not designated, it's as if there is no payment over here. The Rashba does point out that even if he was yichud shibudei, it would not necessarily help over here, because even if he designated the money at that time, the kanvani still is in possession of it to make it a payment or purchase of isur. And so the Rashba in the end says it's lav dafka. Even if he was miyached shibudei, wouldn't help you. Elim kein, the money's reached the chenvani. Although the Bach tries to answer this question, the Rashba, by suggesting that it's a kinyan midrabanan. Even though midoraita, it would not be considered in the possession of the chenvani. Nevertheless, midrabanan, we would consider it in the possession of the chenvani. That once he's miyached ma'ot, we consider it as if he's already given it to the chenvani. And that's why it would create an isur over here. So then why, in our case of the Braita, is there a problem when he tells the workers to go take stuff from the chenvani and then pays it back later? Why is there a problem? Why do you worry about shvit? Why do you worry about all these issues in the Braita? There was no designated collateral over there. It's in a case where he prepaid for it. So now, the difference in the Braita is a case between a case where he gave money to the workers and told them to go buy, or he gave money to the chenvani, tells the chenvani to give them whatever they want when they come into the store. So now, that's the distinction here. That when he gives them the money, and this is as the Bali Tosfot point out, again here, the Gemara could have asked, Liflog bididei. The Braita itself, you could have made a distinction, which is, Bamedvarim shikdim lo dinar. That's in a case where he prepaid the chenvani. So because here he wants to keep it all in a case where he prepaid it. So what the Bali Tosfot suggests over here is that they wanted to keep it consistent in the Braita. So in the case of the Braita, there were two maktim. He prepaid in both situations. Could have differentiated within the Braita and said, well, in the case where he prepays the chenvani, then it's problematic. In the case where he postpays the chenvani, it's not problematic. That would have been a good question for the Gemara to ask. It doesn't ask that. The reason Bali Tosfot said it doesn't ask that is because they want to keep the Braita consistent, that it's all a prepaid case. So in the ratio of the Braita, he prepaid the workers. In the latter part of the Braita, he prepaid the chenvani. And that's the difference in the Braita, and that's why they set it up that way. That's Rabba's solution within Rabba's statement. I said over this whole sugya that we just went through, before Rav Zvi Naradan, the solution of Rav Papa, Amalei Hachi, the Lashona Breita doesn't work so well according to the explanation of Rav Papa. Adatani Tzu V'chlu Tzu V'shtu. Before he says them, go out and eat, go out and drink, Vani Poreya, and I'm going to pay for it. Tzu V'chlu Tzu V'shtu V'ani Mechashev Mi Boile. It should be, go out and eat, go out and drink, and I'll settle it with the chenvani. Because in the case where you say, I need poreya, that makes it sound like you didn't pay yet. You guys go, take whatever it is, and then I'll pay it afterwards. But you're telling me he prepaid to the chenvani. So the language that you would have expected in the braita is, go and eat, go and drink, and I'll settle it with the chenvani. Because the money's already there. He already prepaid for it. So that's a settlement, figuring out what the difference is between the money that's there. But if you say, I need poreya, I'm going to pay for it, I'm going to pay for it. Sounds like it's in the future. It's not something that was prepaid. That's the way that you should emend the braita to read. Now, sometimes when the Gemara says tnei, it literally means an emendation to the braita, and say to change the language of the braita to read, go out and I will resolve the issue with them, and they're actually changing lashon braita. The Ritva and other Rishonim over here suggest that the tnei over here is not like that. It's not that they're emending the language of the braita, they're just saying that's the meaning. When he says Tzu v'shtu, or tzu v'chlu, v'ani poreya, the meaning of poreya over here means b'chashev, I'll settle the issue. So not that they actually changed the language in the braita, they're just saying that that's the meaning of the word poreya in this case. Rav Ashi Amar, kigonch natal v'natan biyad. It's a case where the Baal HaBayit goes into the store with them, and he takes stuff off the shelf and he hands it to them, what they want. So he's taking it and giving it to them. So now, again here you have the same problem, which is the language does not fit so well. Amalei Rav Yemer the Ravashi, Yochi Adatani Tzuba Chlu, Tzuba Shtu. It shouldn't be go out and eat, go out and drink. That seems to mean that he's empowering them to go choose what they want in the store. It should read Tzu Vechlu. Here, take this and eat it. Take this and drink it because it's in his hand. That's what it should be. That would be a better language to describe what's happening over here. When he says go out and eat, go out and drink, that means that he's saying you go pick what you want. Over here, when you say the word slow, it means it's in my hand right now, and take it from me, and you'll eat or drink it. So again, they use this emendation in the braita, which says either change the language, or again, the Ritva says don't change the language, just this is the way you should read it. When it says go out and eat and drink, it means come here, I'll give you what you need, I'll give you what you want over here. Tosfot again, or ask over here, why does the Gemara ask, like he did before, liflog v'litnei b'didah? You can make a finer distinction here, which is, both are cases where he tells them to go out to the store and take the stuff. In one case, he's there, handing it to them, taking it off the shelf and handing it to them. In the other case, he's not there. And that would be the two cases. When he's there, it's problematic, when he's handing it to them. When he's not there, it wouldn't be problematic. Why does the Breita give you two cases? A case where he gives them money, and a case where he says, I'm handing it to you. Why does the Breita make such a distinction when it could have made even a finer distinction? The Baal HaTosfot actually say that there is a chiddush in both aspects of the braita that way. It says, V'yesh lamar, the reisha rebuta kamash malan. That even the reisha here is giving us a huge chiddush. T'chi amar lahem t'vu v'echlu b'dinar zeh. When he says, go ahead and eat with this dinar, v'heim natnu a dinar l'chenvani. And then they go and hand that money to the chenvani. Afo b'ishe nasav natan b'yad. Even if the Baal HaBayit's there taking stuff off the shelf and handing to him, mutar. It's not a problem. It's a huge chiddush. What they're saying, or what the Baal HaTosfot are pointing out, is that both the Reish and the Sefer case where the Baal HaBayit, they're handing them stuff off the shelf. In the first case, he is fine. In the second case, he's not fine. The difference being, who is he acting on behalf of? In the case where he hands them the money and says, go to the store and buy, they go to the store and hand the money to the Chenvani. And the Chenvani goes, now, go pick out what you want. If he stands there and hands them the stuff off the shelf, he's acting on behalf of the Chenvani, not on behalf of himself. On the other hand, in the latter case, where he comes in and says, I'm going to take care of this, I'm going to pay for this, guys, let's go pick stuff off the shelf and I'll cover the bill, and then he takes the stuff off the shelf and hands it to them, in that case, he's acting on his own behalf, because the indebtedness is being created at that time, and then he's going to pay the Chenvani after the fact. So that's the difference, meaning that the huge chiddush in both aspects of the braita, if you keep it this way, which is in the ratio of the braita, he gives them money, they hand the money to Chenvani, and he's there handing them stuff off the shelf, he's acting on behalf of the Chenvani, no problem. In the case where he goes down with them to the store and says, listen, guys, let's take what you want and I'll cover the bill. And he hands it off the shelf to them. Then he's acting on his own behalf and he's facilitating that which they are taking because he's taking possession of it and then handing it to them. It's as if he bought it and then gave it to them as their compensation or really as his obligation to feed them. And that's what the problem is because they didn't prepay the chetvani in a sense. They didn't give the money and he's acting on behalf of himself. And that's why there is a problem in that case, according to Rav Ashi. But as the Rosh Hash points out, that the explanation for what the problem with Shvi'it is actually affected by what the Balei HaTosfot are saying over here. If this individual can stand there and take stuff off the shelf and hand it to them, and we still don't say it's problematic, must be that he's not handing them things that are Asurim the Gamre, because otherwise how could he be doing Nasav Natan Biyad? But rather, what you have to suggest over here is the problem is, like the Balei HaTosfot suggested, and the only problem here is Parei Chovo B'Shvi'it, that he's repaying a loan with Shvi'it, and that is not a problem here because he's already given the money to these workers and they've given it to the Chetvani. Therefore, his being the intermediary and passing to them is not a problem over here. Yotiv Rav Nachman Be'ula, Rav Yimei Bar Papi, Yotiv Rav Chir Ba'ami Gabayu. So I've mentioned this principle to you numerous times, the principle of the Rabbeinu Tam. When you have a list of individuals, here you have Rav Nachman, Ula, and you have Yimei Bar Papi, and then separately it says that Rabbi Chiya Ba'ami was also sitting with them. Why would you delineate someone separately from the other individuals? The Rabbeinu Tam's principle throughout Shas is that means that that person's going to bring the Kiddush in the Sugya. That's already giving you, foretelling you what's going to happen in the Sugya. Watch that person, because they're going to be the person that is the key or the turning point in the Sugya. Only problem is here, Rabbi Chiya Ba'ami doesn't say a word. The person who actually speaks up here is Rav Nachman. And so this undermines the Rabbeinu Tam's principle, and that's what the Balei HaTosfot would say over here. Rabbeinu Tam has this principle, and it's undermined over here by the fact that Rav Nachman speaks, and not Rav Chiya Ba'ami. So what the Balei HaTosfot suggests is that this is actually a twin case to something that's mentioned in the Gemara in Ketubot. There's also a similar case in the Gemara in Ketubot, and those two cases were brought together, and then Rabbi Chiya Ba'ami spoke in the case that's in Ketubot. That's why Rabbi Chiya Ba'ami was still in Esebri, because he brought the Chiddush in Ketubot. The Gemara then went and separated the cases and put one in each Masechta that was relevant to that case. By splitting them up, over here, all of a sudden you have a case where it doesn't seem to make so much sense. That's how the Rabbeinu Tam solves the problem, to keep his principle intact, and say that whenever you delineate someone separately, they're the pivotal person in the sugya. It's true, it just happens to be the sugya in Ketubot, and this was a case that was spoken about at the same time. Now the Gemara divided them up and placed them in each Masechta where it was relevant. So now, the Mekami Bailu, this was the question. Scharo lishbor b'yayin nesech ma'u. If he hired him to break barrels of Yayin Nesech, basically to destroy Yayin Nesech, what is the story with the compensation that he receives? Remember in our Mishnah, if you're a poel that's working, your compensation from the Yayin Nesech is problematic. It becomes like Yayin Nesech, it's asur. So over here, you're being hired to work with Yayin Nesech, but you're actually doing it in a manner that is destructive in nature. Is that okay then? Is your compensation fine? Mir Miran came in the road said, Bikiyumo Asur, since the Jew who's breaking these barrels is interested in the Yayin Nesech staying around. The way that he makes money is if there are barrels of Yayin Nesech. There are no barrels of Yayin Nesech, he's not going to make any money. So he has a vested interest in the Yayin Nesech staying around, at least for a short period of time. And now maybe his compensation then becomes compensation for Yayin Nesech because he wants the Yayin Nesech. Odoma, call the Me'ute Tifla Shapir Dami. Or is it that anytime you're destroying these negative items, that is fine? Meaning that your compensation here is associated with the destruction of Yayin Nesech, which is a value that we want. It's a value or an outcome that we really want. And therefore, your compensation should not be docked in this case, because your working with the Yayin Nesech actually accomplishes what we would want anyway, or the goals that we're looking to accomplish. And therefore, your compensation should be mutar in this case. Again, the word tifla, which we're actually going to see later on in the sect as well, which is that tafel is something that is tasteless, something that is odorless, doesn't have anything to it, and it's used by the Gemara in a very negative connotation most times, which tifla is something that is meaningless, but even more than that, it's something that's negative or has deleterious sides to it or properties to it. And so over here, you're destroying Yayin Nesek, which is a terrible thing, and that's fine. So Rav Nachman, that's what here is the problem that Rabbeinu Tam ran into. It's who speaks up, who answers the question. Here's Rav Nachman, and not Rav Chir Ba'ami, which is Amar Rav Nachman, Yishbor V'Tavo Ala Bracha. Let him break the barrels, and he should be blessed for breaking the barrels, because he's accomplishing what we want anyway, which is the destruction of the Yayin Nesek. He gets compensated for that. His compensation is mutar, and is not considered to be associated with the Yayin Nesek. Okay, we're going to stop here. Two lines from the bottom of Samach Gimel Amud Bet.